Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Have you done your yoga today?
DDP Yoga. It ain't your mama's yoga.
Savage, you wanna come into my real world? I'm gonna snap into yours.
Brother.
My question to you is, what are you? Some kind of a gemologist or something that spring stampede? We're all gonna see if DDP has got any family jewels at all.
Pretty heavy.
You got none.
Diamond Dallas.
Well, macho man. I guess we're going to find out at Spring Stampede.
Wait a minute.
And don't forget to bring your little bimbo Liz.
Whoa.
Because since I'm bringing the lady, you might as well bring the tramp.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho. Honestly, DDP Yoga has changed my life, and it probably saved my career, both in wrestling and in music. It's the best thing I've ever done for my health, mentally. I feel so much stronger, I feel so much better, I feel younger. And the best thing about it is I can do it whenever I want.
An internet weight loss sensation, nearly 3 million clicks to see Arthur Borman's transformation from this to this. 100 pounds gone with yoga?
Arthur, when you started YRG, how much did you weigh?
297.
What do you weigh now?
156.
How long were you walking on those canes, bro?
15 years. This man right here shows that anything is possible, but it starts right here.
For anyone to have any question of whether or not it works, just look at my stuff, because the proof is absolutely in the gluten-free, dairy-free pudding, because all I'm doing is DDP Radio.
It's DDP
Radio.
High five. Good God.
Boys and girls, welcome to another episode of DDP Radio. I know it's been a while since I've been on here, but man, I have been like crazy, crazy busy, and we have got a kick-ass show tonight for you. I'm so excited to be back on the air, and I want to thank big time Sparky and Stacey and Robert for just doing a great job while I've been going. Sparkster, how you doing tonight, bro?
Well, you got it, bro. I'm doing phenomenal. It has been a rough week, but I have so been looking forward to tonight, man.
And you were the one who reached out and said, I want to get Kyle on the show. I was like, awesome. Yeah. I love that. That'd be great. And Stacey, I know we just filmed you for the DDP Yoga docu-mercial. We have there's never been a docu-mercial. There's been infomercials, but we're all about inspiring people. So, we're going to do something completely different. I don't know if it's going to work. I really don't. Just making it up as I go along, like everything I've ever done in my life. And we're filming as we go. And, of course, our two biggest, most inspiring stories right now, of course, the one and only Arthur Borman and Miss Stacey Morris. How are you tonight, beautiful?
I'm doing great, and I had a great time filming on Sunday. They made me cry, but I think that's going to make it a better story, you know?
Absolutely. It's all about heartfelt feelings, you know? It's emotionally being connected to anything, and it's what brings out the best in every single one of us. We're going to get into that tonight, I'm sure. And Robert, how are you doing, brother?
Well, you're keeping me busy as always, man, so I'm doing good.
Okay, I got a couple of announcements. We have moved because of scheduling. At last minute, I've got to move this. We've had some amazing workshops. I was just up at Funk Fitness with Craig Funk and his family. Joanna and Kurt, his mom and dad, were like the coolest people on the planet. I met so many really, really nice people up there an hour, I guess it would be northwest of Detroit, just farm country up there, and just real good people. And we had two kick-ass packed, sold-out classes there at Funk Fitness, and the energy level was the loudest it's ever been. And the people were just really getting into it there. And we definitely converted a bunch of people who had come in just to see what this DDP yoga was all about. And they were pulled in. It was really, it's a great time for everybody. And in my 2 hours, as it normally turns into 2.5 or 3 after greeting people and taking pictures and all that kind of stuff, it was really awesome time. I want to thank the Funks for that, because they were awesome. And we're moving this Saturday to the following Saturday. So if you're in the Chicago area, I just worked out it with my buddy, the Lunchbox. Frankie Rodriguez has an awesome show, awesome internet show, wrestling show. It's really a bit of everything. He gets into sports, he gets into politics, he gets into everything. But originally, his real core base was in wrestling, and that's where me and him became such good friends. He's got a show up there, and he's going to be also sponsoring this event, this DDP Yoga workshop we're going to be doing. And we're going to be doing it for you people who are in the Chicago area at the Seward Park Fieldhouse. And that's in Chicago. All the information's up on Team DDP Yoga. Right, Robert?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he did flip it over. So it's there if you want to know about it. The workshop's going to go from 12 p.m. to 2 p.m. And it will be in the field house. I've rented out the gymnasium there, and we've got it from 12 to 2, and it's going to be an awesome time. I'm going to be up in Chicago, not tomorrow, but next Thursday, and I'm doing a show up there on Thursday night, and I'll be talking about that next week. And then I'm going to be doing Man Cow in the morning on Friday morning, and me and Man Cow, the last two times I went to see him, he was very disrespectful to me. And, I mean, he was my buddy, when DDP Yoga, I should say, when Diamond Dallas Page and WCW was on top of the world. We even did something with Savage as an angle, and it was amazing. And then he sort of, got a little hardcore on me. So, I really got pissed at him the second time, where I almost choked him out. I was really, really mad.
Damn.
I had to breathe through it, and I kept expecting him to turn off at the end. And this time, I'm imagining it's going to be a little different, because if it's not, wow.
Yeah, we don't want to go up against the master of the diamond cutter.
No, I really like him. I like Mankow a lot, but he just says, I'm gonna bury all the hatches, come back and see what we can do. 6:30 in the morning, Chicago time. I like to be up at the crack of 9, but it means I'll be up at the crack of 5 to be over there to see him. So I'm looking forward to seeing Mankow again. And then Saturday we have the field house there at the Seward Park, and I know that's a really sweet area too. At the field house there, I've been so busy. I've been moving into my place in Atlanta. I'm still going back and forth from LA, East Coast, West Coast, from LA to Atlanta, but spending much more time over here. I've been telling you guys for years we're going to be doing online workouts. Pretty much everybody has the capability right now, if you've got one of the newer flat screens with HDMI ports so you can get the internet hookup. Everybody pretty much right now with either Apple TV, or I know Microsoft has one too, where your computer goes right to your TV. So
yeah,
anything that's on. Oh, right, exactly. So whatever you got can go up on your screen, and it could be right from your computer. So we are right now preparing, come the first of the year, sometime into that, we are preparing to do some tests. Live workouts. My house is really sweet. I reached out to some the members and asked them to come up with a couple of names that we could call it, because I wanted to have the feel of this house in the name. And Christina A. from Team DDP Yoga. You know, she was down with us in Mexico down there. She actually showed up when we did the Marines, when we were at Camp Lejeune. She was there with us working out there, and she sent me some of the greatest names, but there was one that stuck out, because there was one name, and it was her favorite too, but it became my favorite just as soon as it hit me, because it's what, you know, I'm all about. It's what who's ever in this house is all about, and anybody who comes in. And now this this crib that I have now is called DDP's Accountability Crib. And I want to thank Christina for coming up with so many great choices, but that one just kicked ass. So that is the new place. Jake the Snake Roberts has moved in. Up till this point, he is down 37 pounds from the 302 pounds he started out.
Wow.
All of that weight was in his stomach. He lost 30 of it, 32 of it down in Texas on his own. And Steve, you, go say something, Sparky. If you can step on me, I don't care. You know what I mean. If you want to say something, say something. Don't get half a word out.
You had the Halloween video that went up, and the difference from when you first flashed him on to that looks pretty amazing.
Yeah, but you got to remember, Jake's like he's like a Ferrari, but he's got like a million miles on him. You know, so he's had the hip replacement, you know, but he never rehabbed. You know, he's a drug addict. He's an alcoholic and a drug addict, and you know it's addiction. He's addicted, and we're doing our best, and we're going to see if we can help with it. So far, so good. We've had a few, you know, falls, you know, but we get back up again. But no big falls, because any drugs step into it, you know, that's out. You know, so that don't work for me. But we've really had some good times, a lot of laughs. And Louis Benson, another member of Team DDP Yoga, who had lost 30 pounds on his own. And then I met him in St. Louis at Raw's 1,000th episode. And he came up to me and he started talking to me. He said, man, I do DDP Yoga and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, really? And anybody knows, if you come up to me and you actually say that, I can tell whether you're, you know, lying or not pretty much pretty quickly. Yeah. But he was. And he had a long way to go. He started at 452 pounds. And we were looking for some editors at that time. And I told him, he told me he'd talk to Steve, because we put it out there on Twitter that we were looking for people who, you know, would be interested in editing a lot of footage, because we're shooting stuff nonstop here at the Accountability Crib here. And because we're not setting anything up. This isn't like a reality show where they go, okay, now here's what you're going to do here. Now you say this, you say that. Now let's just run. Now with bad acting, we are living. Anything you see that's filmed is like we're filming, and we just happen to be filming, and this happens. And from comments to workouts to whatever it is, we're trying to film a lot, which, again, we need a lot of editors. So Louis, when I saw him in St. Louis, he said, you know, I put in to do this. And I said, I'll tell you what, Louis, you know, we got a couple other people that are really interested in this, and, you know, we'll see who works the hardest, you know. And I'll tell you right now, for you to get in that house, you got to lose 20 pounds in the next 3 weeks. Now, when you're over 400 pounds, you can lose weight that fast if you go to the phase 3 eating plan and you work your ass off. And he did. He came at, and I made him take the picture of the scale with his feet, so he didn't know why he was doing it, and then taking it later where I could see the whole scale. He couldn't have gimmicked it or anything. Bottom line is he came in at 30 pounds, and then we had a couple of guys edit the Manduka video, because everybody knows I only use Manduka mats. It's about, they don't pay me to, you know, to say this. I love their stuff, and, you know, it's great. And they give us stuff, yeah, I'll say that. But if I didn't love it, I wouldn't talk about it. Anything I talk about, whether it's our cooking show or whatever, it's I use it. And if I use it, then I'll try to get them to give it to me, you know, because I'm going to talk about it anyway. So long story short, Jake and I have we've already got two cooking shows in the can. We're going to have we're going to be showing a bunch of little things here and there. As a matter of fact, the movie that Steve, you, and I started shooting a little over about 3.5 months ago down in Gainesville, Texas, at Jake's place he was staying at the time. We've got all that footage for the Resurrection of Jake the Snake, the movie, the documentary. And a lot of people have heard that, you know, Jake wants to, you know, get that one more run. And I guess some people think it's the WWE or TNA. And no, that's not that. He's 56 years old. You know, he's beat up as you can be. You know, right now I don't know if he can do it physically. But he doesn't want to go out. And anybody who knows Jake pretty much knows what happened to him when he was last on TV on TMZ. And it was brutal. And Jake Roberts is one of the greatest icons of the 80s in wrestling period, one of the top maybe five talkers, interviewers of all time. You know, he does not want to go out like that. He doesn't want to be remembered for Beyond the Mat, you know, or the TMZ bit. So he told me he felt so good. By the time he was down, like, you know, maybe 20 pounds, he was down in you know, just under 280. And he's like, "Dee, I just can't believe how much better I'm feeling." You know, his fingers were curling under. And because of the diamond cutter and pushing your fingers out and working that, they're coming back. His body is slowly, slowly, slowly coming back. So we'll really see. It's an Arthur Borman-esque story, you know, to a T. So, you know, we'll see where it's going to go. There's going to be some, a lot of ups and downs, and, you know, we just keep moving forward. And like you all know, that's the key to everything. Just keep moving forward. And that brings me to my guest tonight. Oh, my God. I can't say enough about Kyle Maynard. And when I say this, I saw him when he was wrestling for the States, in his senior year. I was there because of Cody Rhodes, and I have been a mentor and friend to Cody because Dusty Rhodes is my mentor and helped. Without Dusty Rhodes, there is no Diamond Dallas Page. So I was there for Cody's junior year and his senior year, and when I saw Kyle Maynard come out on that mat and do his thing, I was blown away, and I wanted to know, Cody, you know, I want to meet that kid. You know, I want to know about him. And I called him up and said, I want to talk to him because I want him to be a part of a book. And I haven't written this book yet, but he's him and Terry Crews. And I don't know if you got from Expendables. Terry Crews' story is unbelievable. But I interviewed Terry, and then I got sidetracked. I didn't get a chance to get to the other people I want to do. But this young man right here is someone who I immediately thought of before he was a best-selling author. You know, he's done so much in that period of time from high school to where he is right now, which I'm thinking is about 7 or 8 years. It's somewhere around there. We'll qualify that once he gets on here. He is here. You might have seen him on Larry King. You may have seen him on The Oprah Show. People are so blown away by this young man. And the thing that totally, of everything he's done, from playing football to wrestling to MMA fighting, climbing Kilimanjaro, I know Bradshaw, JBL, John Bradshaw, just did it, and it kicked his ass. That's his words, not mine. Yes. And this young man, Kyle Maynard, did that, got to the top. I am so blown away and so happy to have him on here. Kyle, how the hell are you, bro?
That's doing awesome, man. It's such a huge honor to be on here with you. I remember the buzz at that state tournament when you were there. And it's just so cool to hear you talk about that. It kind of brought me back to that moment and almost tearing up here thinking about that.
Dude, I was so blown away. And like Cody was like, "Cool, everybody knows Kyle." You know, because you've been wrestling forever. He's been wrestling forever. You know, it was awesome. So take us, okay, from that, you know, that time right there through high school. How does all, first of all, how, take, I'll tell you, let's go back to your kid and tell the people who don't know, haven't seen your video on teamddpyoga.com. A lot of people have seen it, but a lot of people haven't. So give the people, you know, your run to where you are today.
Yeah. I mean, the very kind of condensed story, but it was right when I was born. I was born with a condition called congenital amputation. Basically left my arms ending right at my elbows, my legs at my knees. And I was the first of four kids, but my parents had no idea what was going to happen. My mom had normal ultrasound through the pregnancy, and then when I was born, then I was born without, with the missing limbs. And they just had an awesome attitude to not focus on everything that was wrong. Every time that someone would go and tell me, or tell them at the time that I couldn't do something, saying Kyle's going to be dependent on your help and with, from living at home the rest of his life, or he's going to be dependent on government assistance, or he's going to be dependent on this or dependent on that. They ask why. Why can't you live a normal life? And that's really what they just encouraged me to find. There's a lot of ups and downs. To your point, it's just there are a lot of failures, but I think it was those failures and having them really encourage me to continue to stand back up, to dust the dirt off, and keep moving forward. That's what I think made the difference.
On that note, because we both know Cody, I want to give a little story. Anybody's heard Own Your Life has heard this. In Cody's junior year, he went undefeated. And then the next year, everyone's expecting him to go undefeated again. And on his 11th match, he lost. And I call him up, just like I knew he lost. I was like, hey, dude, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And he goes, Dallas, I lost. He goes, I lost. I can't believe it. I lost. I go, thank God. He goes, well, thank God. He said, why would you say that? I said, Cody, do you think you learn anything by winning? You learn by losing. You learn by falling down. And then I said to him, you'll really appreciate this, Kyle. I said, would you rather got to the semifinals, been undefeated, faced that cat, and lost and not made it to the finals? He went, God, no. I go, dude, you own this in your head now. Don't let anybody own you. You own this. He got to the finals. I know you were there. He gets against the guy who beat him, and he ate him for lunch. I mean, it was like 11-3, something like that, the score was, or something like that. But he was so yoked, and it was all about, it was about just flipping the script and learning from your losses, like you did. And brother, I look at that video, all the great footage. Obviously, you were a big Warrior fan, huh?
I was, yeah. Warrior was my man.
So how now playing football? Okay, wrestling I can even understand, but playing football now. Where did that come from? Obviously, I know where the heart came from, but what made you say, I want to play football? That's a bold statement.
It was, I grew up, my dad was my hero growing up, and I wanted to be just like him. I mean, he was military, so that's what I dreamed for a long time. I wanted to, jump out of planes, go after bad guys. He was a football player, he was a wrestler, so, I mean, that was, I wanted to follow in his footsteps. And football was, of course, every kid, especially growing up in Georgia in the Southeast, football is huge. There's a lot of the friends I had were football players. I wanted to go out and I wanted to play. I didn't want to be just a token member of the team. I wanted to, contribute. And, I was convinced the first day of practice coming in sixth grade was my first season. I was 11 years old. I was pretty convinced that the coach was going to go and line me up as a quarterback on the team. And I was thinking and just envisioning myself, throwing that perfect spiral pass. And he tells me to go and line up as a nose guard, and I didn't even know what that was, but I figured defensive line, all right, I can figure this out. So I lined up right across from the center down there, and, I had vaguely an idea of what was going to happen, and the center was going to go and snap the ball, so I figured I'd go and follow it. He snapped between his legs, and I just dove underneath his legs, messed the quarterback up so bad I got the sack first play. Came back that night, told my dad, I was like, you know what, I think we're going right to the NFL now.
Big dream, big Sparky. I know you got to chime in on some of this here.
I know that's just killing me. All that stuff. Like, I don't know how you decide what you're going to do next with how many things that you've done.
So actually, it's a really interesting to go and ask that because I think that sometimes, as Americans, or just in our culture in general, we get so caught up in what's next, and the cool thing is with what you guys teach and with, yoga and practices like that or meditation, different things, it kind of teaches you to be a little bit more present-minded. I know a lot of other mountaineers and people like that, great people, but when they're on one mountain, they're talking about that next mountain, and they haven't even finished climbing the mountain that they're on. And, you know, you can get so caught up in doing that. And to me, I think I'm always going to have those next things. There's a lot of goals I have out there. I have different ADD entrepreneurial goals. I've started a gym 4 years ago in Atlanta. Want to probably start other gyms. Also have now go and speak this year probably over 100 times around the world. Gotten to, you know, just work on a few other things, documentary projects, stuff like that. Want to go and work on kind of turning something into a TV series, try to go and reach more people through different storytelling mediums. Also want to get into Ironman triathlon next year. I think if we're sail around the world, circumnavigate the globe in a sailboat someday, I think that would be pretty cool. I think, you know, going into space in the next 5 years, I think going into space, whether it's with Richard Branson or otherwise, I think it would be pretty special thing to experience that at some point. So I mean, there's always going to be those things out there. It's just in really trying to be present-minded and enjoy, like, this moment that we have right now is a great one.
Now, bro, have you reached out to Richard Branson yet?
I have not. If you know anybody to talk to, man, that's let's get on there together.
There yet? But if you were to, like, to send video and then talk, I think that he is such a cool cat, just the way he handles himself. And there's a guy, obviously, who dreams really big. And I think he'd be blown away by A to Z. And you might have your space, you might have your spot in less than 5 years. But, of course, now's where you make the move. Now, let me ask you, I've heard that you have a gym, and you just mentioned it right here. Now, what part of Atlanta is it in?
It's in Gwinnett County, Northeast Atlanta, Suwanee, Georgia. It's not a huge gym. We do what's called CrossFit there. And CrossFit, sure. I mean, is it kind of, you know, it's jack of all trades, kind of master of none. And CrossFit is the train protocol now for the Navy SEALs. I mean, it's a very intense program. But really what we've tried to go and do is create a program for just, you know, not professional athletes or not Navy SEALs, but just, you know, like everyday people and people that just want to be healthier in their lives. And we've had some amazing transformations, probably the coolest of which is my wrestling coach's wife. She is a huge inspiration to me. She's a grandmother now. She had been a cheerleader in college, but as a grandparent, you know, like all through probably 25, 30 years, she didn't do anything to work out. Didn't do anything to go and eat right. You know, it was just kind of, she came into the gym and we started off, you know, with a very scaled back version of CrossFit. She started by doing just push-ups on her knees and maybe could do one or two of those. And so if she couldn't do that, we'd go and do it just leaning against the wall, kind of a plank position there. And she gradually kept working up. I mean, kind of subscribed to, well, not kind of, I'm a little dogmatic about my subscription to belief in the paleo diet. So gluten-free, dairy-free, soy-free. And she, through the diet, through just like 3-4 days a week of CrossFit, now is doing handstand push-ups, unassisted.
Wow.
Handstand push-ups, and it's just incredible. And the craziest thing is now, too, is it's called No Excuses CrossFit, but I hear people all the time, they'll come into the gym, they'll talk to me and talk to their coaches, and they'll go and say, like, they'll look at her, they'll look at, you know, a 100 of our other amazing members that have achieved incredible things, and they'll go and say, I can never do that. I can never do that. And to me, it's like, it's such a lie that we tell ourselves, because in my head, I know where she started. And they don't see that. They don't see where she started. Sometimes we got to start so small. We got to take those baby steps, and it's a humbling thing to do it.
Absolutely, bro. I love it. Now, let me ask you something here. You mentioned the paleo diet and free, like, we're all, like, not everyone, but a lot of the people, everyone who's had amazing results. And because it comes down to, you know, I was the first, well, actually, Kerry Lang, who is like the godmother of DDP yoga, she's the first one to go gluten-free and dairy-free only because she had to, because she had that celiac gene, and it you know, it lays dormant in your body, but eventually it's come out. And I watched her body change again when she gave the wheat and dairy, and I watched her skin at 55, 56, 57, 58. I watched it tighten up. you know, for being a big girl for, you know, for about 10 years and having the baby, she had a lot of, you know, skin. And I watched it in her 50s tighten up. And I thought, you know what, I keep telling people about this. I got to try this myself. And I've been wheat-free and dairy-free for over 3 years now. And I actually developed a workout, Kyle, that I call it Wake Up. It's 10 minutes. It starts in the bed and goes to the floor on the mat. And by the time you get done, you know, it's like, I call it Tin Man in women because it gets you loosened up and moving and going. And since I developed that workout because I felt like I got hit by a truck every morning I rolled out of bed. And once I went gluten-free and dairy-free, man, wow. I've never done that workout. After 3 months, I've never done that workout again. I can go right in one of my extreme workouts. And watching it again with Jake, you know, watching Jake go, I can't believe how much better I feel. And that's one of the reasons why we're doing our cooking. You know, once we get that together and we're, you know, we're like I said, we're putting them in the can right now and just having fun with them. Everything we pretty much eat, we film. So, you know, it turns into some, you know, some long stuff. We got to edit it down. But he really feels now. Have you done that? Have you tried doing any gluten-free or dairy-free? Have you tried that yet?
You know, I have been there for 3 years. I'll give you the kind of the short story for me. After we met, or actually not when we met, Dallas, when you saw the state tournament when I was 18, graduated high school that year, and my life changed overnight. I, you know, did interview with Larry King, Oprah, released a book. I mean, it just kind of life, you know, just happened. And I know you know a thing or two about being kind of a road warrior, and, you know, you just, the time that you spend traveling is tough on your body. And at 18 years old, 19 years old for me, it was 19 when the book came out. So 19, I'm traveling and nonstop. Did probably like 60 cities in like 3 months, 3.5 months when the book first came out, just different city every day. And it was, I gained like 30 pounds.
Really?
I was just eating airport food, just crap, you know, I mean, the just garbage stuff. That, I mean, you know, just the whatever it was. And I, you know, I would go and try to rationalize things, like push off the workout. Like, oh, I don't need to work out today. I'll work out tomorrow. And it just kind of continued to happen where it just snowballed one thing after the next. But I remember looking in the mirror and seeing this guy that's looking back at me, you know, had put on this weight. I was having sleep apnea issues. I mean, mild, like, blood pressure issues. I mean, to get real personal, like, sex drive issues. I mean, it was like, and this is like 19 years old. Like, this shouldn't be happening to a 19-year-old kid. It was, you know, just, and that's where I was like, I got to change something. It was about three years ago that it really started to go and turn around for me. I'm 26 now, so 22, 23 years old. And I was like, made that change. And overnight, I wouldn't say that overnight. It took at least probably a month for me to start seeing change. And it just, like, My body, just my energy level started coming back. My you know, general mood. I didn't have any type of like mood swing issues. I mean, I was able to keep a pretty level, you know, kind of brain chemical level there. I mean, so much stuff. My sleep was better. I mean, just everything. I was, you know, had the energy to go and work out. Wanted to go and work out. And it was diet. It was 100%. I mean, starting with the diet. And then even coming from a guy that owns a gym, I mean, working out and getting your body moving, getting your cells to go and really become active, getting the mitochondria to work to become more active is important, hugely important. But if you are not taking care of yourself with food, then you're just doing yourself a huge injustice, because that's where you're going to see the real change, the biochemical, you know, the deep change. And that's what I think we're all looking for, is that quality of change.
Hey, bro, that you know that at 23, never mind 26, but at 20, that you knew to do that. That is so far ahead of the queue. It took me till I was 53, you know, and I was eating better and better and better, but I still hadn't hit that point. And I'm going to just, like, quick notes here. You know, like, some people, you're like a wheat Nazi or a dairy Nazi, and I'm not really. I just want you to know that the wheat that is in from Ezekiel bread, which is like the top line of the, you know, the best wheat you can eat, it still comes from the wheat seed, which is not the wheat seed that God or whoever you want to believe put on this planet. It is not a It's a synthetic engineered chemical that they mixed with the wheat. That's why people have such obesity and sickness, and that's one of the reasons, because it comes down to your food, the dairy. I've had Robin O'Brien on here. She told everybody, if you put, you know, the regular cow will give you 1 gallon of milk next to the cow that's got the syringes in them and whatever chemicals they're putting in, that cow will give you 3 gallons to milk to every gallon of milk. And a doctor, I can't
We're the only country in America, I mean, in America, too, we're the only country that allows our dairy cattle to be, you know, given that much hormone. I mean, given the types of hormones, too, that we go and feed our cattle, I mean, it's insane. And it's just, if you look at the number of, like, the propensity of, like, food allergy and, I mean, a whole range of other spectrums, type 1 diabetes, you know, I mean, these things are just on the meteoric rise. Autism, a lot of this stuff, I believe, it might not be solely related to food. There are obviously other environmental factors that are out there. But, you know, the food is that one environmental factor you can control. You can't always control the quality of the air that you're breathing or, you know, I mean, a lot of things, too. I mean, maybe that what's being put in the water, too, that you drink. I mean, really, some stuff is out of our control. Or maybe, who knows, right? There's some people that say, like, cell phones are going to go and give us, like, brain tumors. And to me, it's like you can spend all your time worrying about, like, all that stuff, you know, all the stuff that's out there that's out of your control, or you can start focusing on stuff that's in your control. And the stuff that's in your control is your activity level, your behaviors, your choices, your actions. I mean, you know, overcoming, battling addiction, and your food intake. But those are things, too, that we can control. To me as a kid, I must tell you, when I was in fifth grade, I really struggled a lot with being born the way that I was. I thought, you know, felt very different, isolated from other kids, like they were going to look and stare at me or you know, some issues with, like, bullying. And, I mean, I got a point in fifth grade before I started playing football, before I started wrestling. I got to the point where I was just ready to give up on my life. And it was because, you know, I'd lay in bed all the time and I would just pray. And I would, like, you know, ask, like, why, God, like, would you do this to me? You know, just why? And I'd ask too, you know, just like that I just wish that I'd wake up and I'd have arms and legs. And, you know, and then each morning that it didn't happen, it was tough. I mean, it, you know, I'd have to go to school that day. I'd come home and I would just, a lot of times at 10 years old, I was thinking in the future, you know, like who would ever give me a job or career path someday, you know, or would I really have to live with my mom and dad the rest of my life? Or what about with, you know, girls at 10 years old started to have crushes on girls. Like, would a woman ever see me as an equal? I mean, all this stuff, I was really clouded with a lot of doubt there. And you know, I think it's just the most important thing to know is that, for one, your life matters. You know, that you're worthy, you're good enough. I mean, that you're capable of helping other people. And the thing is if you're going to do that, if you're going to go and try to reach and make a difference in other people's lives, you got to put your own oxygen mask on first. You know, in the airplane, they tell you, put your own mask on first before you help somebody else. Like, you got to do that for yourself. And when we do that, amazing things happen.
You know, you talk about emotional gravity. You know, when you pull yourself down, and I talked with Jake about this, you know, quite a bit. Like, no one can do more damage to you than you. You know, don't, like, look, we just shot something. We were shooting at the time, and we were shooting something completely different in the house. And when I started to talk to Jake, I said, yo, Louie, come here. I want you to get this. And I just started saying to Jake, because he'd gone and get his shoulder worked on, because the yoga doc was, he's a chiropractor and one of my partners, and he'd you know, help Jake with his hips because he has a hip replacement. Of course, he never rehabbed that hip replacement 8 years ago, so it's a real struggle right now. And his shoulder, he has one of those I can't remember what it's called, but it's like a lump on your shoulder, and it's an impingement. That's what it is. And he started, like, you know, doc's showing it to him, and you have to work around that, and, you know, have some Advil, get some anti-inflammatories. And, you know, when he got back to the house, and I wasn't there, he called me up. He goes, dude, where you at? I go, around the corner. He goes, okay, because I got to talk to you. And he's starting to get antsy again, you know, like, I'm, you know, like, oh, man, this sucks. How am I going to get around this? He starts pulling himself down. And I'm like, what are you doing? You're up. You're moving around. You're a week. 10 months ago, I go, you'll get around this. Stop pulling yourself down. And then I look at his shirt, and there's nothing the matter with his shirt, but everything that Jake has is like this was zombie killers. You know, it was wasted youth, and another one was like Jesus rise. You know, I go, look at. I said, we are what we tell ourselves we are. Now,
that's so true.
It's so true. We tell ourselves I said to him, when Jake the Snake Roberts started to cut his promo or went to the ring, did you start to say, oh, God, I'm going to suck so bad. Oh, boy, this is really going to go, man. I'm going to be horrible. Did you? You went, hell no. I go, then why would you do it now? You know, you get it. You were one of the best in the world. Use that. You have that mindset in there. Use it. Go back to it. And then all of a sudden, his whole physiology changed. So what I want to know from you, now you're in fifth grade. You're against the wall. And so many different levels, but no one has your story. You know, not like you had it and not did what you did. I see that. How your teammates embraced you. Is it when you started playing sports and your guys looked around and, like, who was, like, the first to go, hey, this kid's got more heart than anybody on this team? Like, what happened there? How did that shift happen?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with that was that the kids accepted me just because it was like, you know, they didn't look at me as being an inspirational member of the team. It was just like, yeah, I was a member of the team. You know, like, I wanted to go out there and I wanted to contribute. I wanted to, you know, make tackles in football. I wanted to win matches in wrestling. And I think other kids, you know, they would, like, accept me for that. And it was just, you know, growing up in my family, I got three younger sisters, too. My sisters and my parents, we never really focused on the disability. And like you said, like, you become so much of, like, what you think about and is stuff that we kind of surround ourselves with and the people that are in our lives. Like Jim Rohn said, we're probably most influenced by the five people we spend the most time with. And I think it's true, you know, and it's as hard as it is sometimes, like we gotta be mindful of that, of these influences. And other people may not have the, you know, the amazing family that I did growing up. For some people, that's their challenge that they've had to go through this life and had to deal with. For me, my parents, they didn't focus on the disability. They didn't try to convince me that I was disabled or that I shouldn't take risk. You know, other kids they're playing in cleats. I'm down there on the ground, and you know, it was like there's a lot of like risk. And I'm sure for my parents, there's a lot of like nerve wracking times. You know, just they didn't want me to go through the hardships, the losses, but they just they kept encouraging me, and they kept focusing on just the things that I could do, and just teaching me that I was normal. And it took a long time. I mean, in wrestling, when I started wrestling, I was really, really, really bad. I lost every single match I wrestled for 35 times in a row. I know you and your career, you strung together a couple of losses, you know, and then you kind of get back through. Other people maybe that have listened to this, maybe they aren't wrestlers, but everyone has been knocked down at some point. Every single person has been knocked down. Everybody's had someone tell them that their dream, what they want out of this life is impossible. People, I'd sit in the bleachers when I was in youth wrestling, and I would go and listen just a couple rows up. I can almost still hear it out of my left ear to this day, like just hearing people say, like, Kyle doesn't have hands to grab someone, or he doesn't have arms himself to go and reach out and, you know, and reach to someone. He doesn't have legs to get leverage over top of someone. And they'd make this blanket judgment to say it's completely impossible for a guy without limbs to ever win a match in wrestling. And the thing was, though, for a while, like, I bought into it, and like, I would hear that, and it would change my, you know, inner physiology, I mean, my, you know, or just my posture, I mean, everything else. It was just like I became more defeated, and I accepted that, and consequently made that true. But I remember that first kid that I beat, when I beat him, Finn just beat him by a little bit. Took him down 15 times in the match, where they stopped the match when he beat him by a mercy roll. And it was like it forever changed that belief, because it was like now that belief that I could not do this can never go back to that point. You know, and it changes you. You know, it's the first time that we all have those moments where we break through with something, and that belief is changed. But it starts with starting to go and just baby steps, gain a little bit of confidence. I mean, just, you know, see a little bit of success in something and just continue to take, you know, one small baby step after another that just kind of continues to move in one direction, I believe. It's not a magic pill or a quick fix. It's just getting back up, dusting the dirt off, and continuing to move forward.
That's so powerful, and it's so true. We are what we tell ourselves we are. So if you want to say, I'm so fat, I'm so lazy, you know, I'm the queen of excuses, oh, God, I just can't do this. Well, you're right. If you say you can or you say you can't, you're right. I believe Henry Ford said that, and that is so powerful. Now, I want to open up the lines here, because I'm sure we got people want to ask this guy questions. The number you can call with, and Robert, correct me if I'm wrong, is 347-994-1216. That's 347-994-1216.
That's correct.
And, if you got a question for Kyle, I'm sure, Stacy, I'm sure you have something there to before we bring anybody else on here. Stacy, you got any questions for Kyle?
Well, I was just, you know, I love your video, and there were so many inspiring moments within it, but the one that really stuck out with me is Kilimanjaro, and I just looking at what's involved in that, I mean, was there ever a point during the climb where you said, oh, geez, why did I do this, or what was that like?
Probably through about 50,000 steps that it took to get there. I was asking myself why I was there. I mean, you're absolutely right. The mountain was beautiful. It was amazing, but I saw the thing for the first time, and I was, like, scared out of my mind. I mean, it was excited, but I was also scared, too, and there's a quote that I think about a lot from Mike Tyson's first boxing coach, Custy Amato. He said, heroes and cowards feel the exact same fear. Heroes just respond to it differently.
Wow.
And if you look up the definition of a hero in Merriam-Webster, I mean, one of the accepted definitions of a hero is one who shows great courage. And I think that can be true for anyone, because we all have those Kilimanjaros. It might not be literally Kilimanjaro, but those things, those mountains that we see that look almost impossible. And, you know, with Kili, the thing is, it's not a part of a mountain chain. It's a freestanding peak. And so you're looking at this thing, and it's just above the cloud. It's beautiful. But, you know, you're in the rainforest when you start, and you see this, like, snow and the ice on the summit. And, you know, I was looking in the rainforest, sitting there in the rainforest, looking up at this, like, snow-capped peak and thinking it just seems so far. It was a 38-mile trail, and I was walking on all fours, the bear crawl, to the top. And it was on our fourth day in the mountain, fourth day of what we had projected it was going to take 15 days to accomplish, was when I hit my innermost cave. I mean, I was broken. I mean, it was only 4 days in, but my arms and my feet had already started to swell a lot, both from the altitude and just walking on my elbows. And I came into my tent in this camp on the fourth day, and there might have been about 80 or so people at this camp, other hikers and stuff like that too. And I heard my friends that I was there with. They were outside of my tent, standing outside, laughing and joking with each other and meeting other people from other camps. And I couldn't even stomach to, like, smile. I couldn't even really, like, try to pretend that I was happy. And I just came into my tent, and I just laid down on my sleeping bag, and I just broke and cried. Mm. Cried for a while. And the reason why we were there, other than just to experience it ourselves, was, like I told you guys a little bit earlier, I had a dream to be in the military. Well, that dream didn't materialize, like, as literally as I thought that it would. But, I mean, I wanted to send a message to veterans. I wanted to send a message to men and women who had sacrificed their literally their limbs for our freedom. and to show them that even after the sacrifice, you can still come back and live the life that you want. And with that, you know, I really started thinking about this and started thinking about a promise, too, that I made to a mom named Vicky, you know, in Arizona. I met her, met Vicky before I left. And in a gym, we were just about to do a workout together. It was a small circuit training gym. A friend of my unknown's out there. And Vicky started telling me about her son, Corey. Corey had been in the Marine Corps. And in Afghanistan, in May of last year, he was killed in combat and had saved several Marines before he had passed away. Corey had a wife and three daughters. One daughter who was not born yet, and they had never met. And she was telling me, she said, you know, if Corey were still here, he'd want to help you. He'd want to send this message to the troops. He'd want to be a part of this mission. We called it Mission Kilimanjaro. And she said, you know, there might be a way that he could help you. And she said, would you take my son's ashes to the summit?
Wow.
And I promised her that I would. And,
wow.
You know, I'm sitting there laying in the tent and thinking about this and thinking, like, you know what? I can't break that promise. Like, we have to do this. So we changed our route, went up the western side of the mountain, steepest, iciest path that was shorter, more direct. Took 5 days off the total climb, and fewer, like I said, fewer than 1% of climbers take this route. I mean, it was a crazy, crazy experience there, but just knowing why we were there made such a difference. And we summited on our 10th morning on the mountain. It was January 15th of this year at 7:15 a.m. and had 45 minutes to the summit, at the summit by ourselves. And we got to pay tribute to Corey and leave his ashes there and just come back now and share the story. But I don't think we would have been able to do it if we, you know, we couldn't have done it if we didn't know why we were there.
So it's all about purpose. It's about focus. It's about direction. It's goals, you know, but in this scenario, it's more than all of that. And it's emotion. And it's emotion that drives every one of us, man. That's a powerful story, bro. So much for sharing that, man. That's strong. Got callers. We're going to go a little bit later tonight than normal, 10 o'clock, because this is a very, very strong and powerful show. Spark, I'm sure you have a question here for Kyle.
Yeah, I'm coming off my goosebump. That was cool, man. That's like so inspiring to hear that you did that for Corey and the family. Wow. I don't know what to follow that with. I know Robert does have some callers in the queue, though. I think we got Slim and Hack somewhere.
I want to take Boomer's up there, right? I think Boomer's on deck, right? Boomer, how you doing today?
What?
You there, brother?
Hey, Boomer, you want me?
That's right.
Hey, yeah, it's Boomer. First of all, I do want to talk to Kyle, but first I want to talk to Dallas. Dallas, I just want to let you know that your family's in my prayers out in Point Pleasant, because I do vacation out there in Seaside Heights. And I also want to let you know that guy, Robert Ford from the Lancaster Barnstormers, he's actually arranging something from Lancaster through the team to get people in Lancaster to donate for the people in Jersey. So I just want to let you know that with Floss and myself, We have friends out there in Seaside Heights, but we also, you know, you're our friend too. So we really are keeping you and your family in our prayers. And I just want to, you know, stop there and just say that. And I hope your family's well, because I know you don't really talk about that much. And I just really do hope that they are well and you are in our prayers. And for Kyle, I just want to say you're so inspiring, your story. And, especially the Mount Kilimanjaro thing. And I have a dream myself of doing something like that. I want to walk something called the Camino de Santiago in Spain. And it's a dream. I don't know if I'll ever be able to do it because, well, sometimes life isn't, you know, life. I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to do it, you know, because I'm having some health issues now. But, But I'll fight. I'll keep fighting my health issues that I'm having. And if I can get through my health issues I'm having, I really want to do that because it's part of my I want to do this thing because this walk, it's a solitary walk, and it's a time for me to do some reflection on my life, and it's something I want to do. And every time I watch you walk that Kilimanjaro, I say, man, look at this guy doing this. You know, if he can do that, there's nothing I can't do. If he can do that, and if I really want to do this walk of, you know, this Camino of Santiago, it's called the Walk of St. James, then I'm in trouble breathing. I can do it, and I will do it. You know, as long as I can get over there, I'm going to try. So anyway, that's all I called in for.
Really,
I just wanted to say that.
I hope to see you there doing it, man. That's incredible. And it sounds like such a cool journey for you.
Thank you.
It all starts with saying you're going to do something, you know. One day, I'm a wrestler.
Well, you taught me that, Dallas. I mean, you taught me, you know, you taught me from the beginning of May that, you know, even in this journey of DDP that, you know, when I started out, I was, you know, I was heavy and I wasn't doing anything to get myself better. And I was, you know, sick then and you know, and I, you know, you taught me I can do stuff and I did my DDP yoga and I'm doing it and I'm losing my weight. And well, you've seen how much I lost. I sent you a picture of my scale and, you know, and without this program, I would be a lot sicker than I am. I have a good attitude. I have that attitude that, you know, that 90%, and that's, you know, I wouldn't have that without you. And I wouldn't be eating right without you. So, I wouldn't be doing any exercise without this program, without Arthur and without Steve. You know, that Steve gets a lot of credit for putting that video of Arthur out there. And I really thank Steve a lot. I thank you for your how much you inspire all of us and how much you push all of us and how much you without you. Giving us the support and showing us how to support each other, you know, we wouldn't be able to do this. And it's all of us pushing each other. I mean, you see it in the guys like Nolan and GJ and Don, and I'd have to keep mentioning people. But you see it in everybody. I mean, everybody, even all the old people and all the people who joined since May, you just see they just get your attitude, and they just keep passing it on. You know, it's so cool. So. Anyway, I know there's so many other people that want to talk, and so I'll shut up.
Well, Boomer, just real quick, I will say something with this, something that helped me. It was for this Kilimanjaro thing to happen, it happened in January of this year, but it about a year ago today, I mean November, I was at a point where I was kind of freaking out. And I there's a lot of factors and stresses and stuff like that had to go right to be able to go and make this trip work. And I was really concerned. I mean, I was thinking that there had to be like perfect celestial alignment to actually make this unfold and happen. And the gear I was having built, some amazing people out in Arizona made some amazing equipment for me, but it was just, we didn't have that ready. I had already worked with some other people on trying to get some gear, and it wasn't working out. I mean, just so many factors are coming in there. We're trying to raise funds to be able to go. We had Chris and Sandra, a Marine Corps veteran, and Sandra, an Army veteran, that joined us on the climb. And we wanted to go and make it so they didn't have to come out of pocket for the trip. And it was just, I kept thinking, I'm going to push this off. I'm going to push this off. And I was having a conversation with my mom, and she said, book your flight. And I was like, what? I was like, that's crazy. I was like, you know, I'm not going to go and waste $2,000 on a trip to Africa, you know, on a flight if I'm not going to go. And she said, book your flight. And I was like, there's no way. We're going back and forth arguing about this. She said, if you book your flight, it's going to work out. Everything's going to happen. Sure enough, I mean, she was absolutely right. I mean, things became crystal clear. It was like, we've got to do X, Y, Z, and this is how we're going to go and make it happen. And I think that there's power to just setting a, you know, kind of a deadline for ourselves, and instead of having some goal out there in the future that's kind of looming, we're going to go and say, like, a realistic time frame, you know what, I'm going to do this within the next year. I mean, if you do this, you know, and say, like, you know, a year from today, I will find myself on that trail in Spain, then I guarantee you will do everything that you can to make that happen and that you will be there.
Dude, that is, you in, on such a smaller scale, you know, say speaking in front of people, which I know you do quite a bit of yourself, is the most, people would rather die than speak in front of people, especially, you know, like a speech and have some real meaning and have people laugh and be inspired and be moved, you know, forget all that, just speaking scares the hell out of people, but I had spoke to kids for years, but I knew as I was coming towards the end of my career in the wrestling ring, I knew I had to reach out there and start speaking, you know, in keynote spots. And, you know, I had people contact me and, you know, they wanted like 45 minutes. I'd never done that. I'd never done Fast 15. And I remember getting ready to go to Rome. And we were about a month away from doing that. And when I booked it for like 45 days from there, I said, I'll do it. But I said that, it made it so real, just like you booking your flight. You know, because I would never say anything that I'm not going to do. You know, I'm still going to do it. You know?
Right.
Because
it becomes crystal clear, you know, like this is what you got to do to get ready for that. And it's like, you know, and then you see too that like after you get through and you take that, you do that first event, you know, and you realize at that point, like, okay, you know, now it might not go over perfect. It took me probably like 2-3 years before I felt comfortable. I was scared out of my mind that first speech that I gave. But it's kind of a dose tolerance thing, you know, you kind of just give yourself a small dose and you develop a little bit of a tolerance and just continue to go and work in there. And it just, it builds on it. And you just, at that point you become better in your craft. And I gotta get one of the cutoff dress shirts that I saw you wearing on stage underneath the coat, man. I was cracking up when I saw you speaking that. That was, that was too funny.
Up next, but I want to just, because we're on such a roll here and so many things that we're talking about. Now, this is when you put examples with that. Before you go out to speak, anytime, I don't care if it's the first time, you know, 3 months ago or last night, before you walk out there, are you going, oh my God, I'm going to screw this up so bad. Oh God, this is going to be horrible. Or do you think this is going to be the best speech I've ever done? This is going to rock people. What are you saying? What's happening in your head before you walk out there?
One of the things that helps me is I read this, I'm obsessed about reading about different things, philosophy and different like sort of motivational leaders. And Dale Carnegie wrote a famous book called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he talks about speaking in the book. And he says that before he goes up and speaks, or he's passed now, but before when he would speak, he would stand in the back of the room and he would just feel the energy from people there in the room. And he said, just love them from the back. And I just try to think about that now, just to love people from the back and just to feel that there. And you can, to me, one of the things I talk about are more of the failures, the vulnerabilities, the hardships, as opposed to just the successes. Cause I think those are the things that we connect most to. And my hope is that for some people that are on the ropes there in their life for different reasons at different times, that it might give them some sense of hope.
That's awesome, man, because hope is what this program, to me, what we do is all about. And I want to bring on Hack. Are you out there, buddy?
Yes, I am.
How are you tonight, pal?
Huh?
I said, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good.
Question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Huh?
Awesome. What's your question, bro?
You got a question, man?
Oh, yeah. How do you deal with everyone looking up to you and being a motivation to others whenever you never wanted to be that? Or if you did want to be an inspiration, speak to that.
No, you know, I mean, it's really interesting that you asked that, because I remember one time in one of my senior year in high school, and it was the first time that I kind of had like the media attention come around, and they came into the wrestling room, and it was HBO Real Sports. They came in with cameras for about a week over middle of our season. It was around Christmas time, so halfway through the wrestling season, and they're filming for like a week in there, and some of the kids afterwards, not in a mean way in any way, came up to my coach, and they asked my coach, they were like, why are they filming Kyle? Like, what's special about Kyle? And, you know, it was, my coach told me about the story later, and we kind of laughed about it. And that's the cool thing is there is the compliment that I go and take from it is that, you know, they didn't look at me as like, you know, some different inspiration or whatever else. And people, I think, can go and go down that path of feeling up too much with the ego and thinking that they're invincible and, you know, they're on top of the world and that they're better than other people. And it's just, to me, that there's no greater curse than that. I've seen other amazing speakers, and some of them are just, you know, fantastic, or, you know, and really engage with other people. And I've seen other speakers who are amazing speakers on stage, but then they just disconnect and won't be like a real authentic person when people meet them in real life. And you know, I know the loneliness of, I know, Dallas, you know this, when you come back up in the hotel room after a speech and you're just there and you're alone. You know, you're traveling on your own and you're sitting there alone. And that, to me, it's like you can create a prison just by that ego. And when I see people do that, it's just crazy to me. But that being said, another thing that people say is they're like, Kyle, like, you're a speaker, you know, you can go and help other people, you know, and that I'm just like an, you know, average person. I can't help anybody. And to me, there's no bigger lie that we tell ourselves. There's no separation between me and you. We're cut from the same cloth. You know, we are, you know, I mean, from the, you know, the same stuff in this universe where we are connected together in ways that we can't even imagine. And that there is no separation, in my opinion, between me and between you. I mean, every single person has an ability to make a gift, or to have a gift and share it. I mean, Stacey, look what you've done. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, your story, your spirit is going to be such an inspiration to people that you would never even know. People that just hear your story, they see you, and they see you overcoming what you have. I mean, it's just incredible. And that's, I think, what we're here to do, is to try to help each other out and to try to, you know, lift each other up and just to leave the world a little bit of a better place than we found it.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Hey, Hack, thanks for that question. Appreciate it. I want to bring on our next guy here. And this guy, he's been so inspiring to so many people, and me included, this last 5 months. Slim, how are you, buddy? You out there?
Dude, if I'm being honest with you, if my life gets any better, my head is just going to freaking explode. I don't know if I can handle it. But I say I'll have to say that I am doing fantastically.
Now, you know, Kyle, I just got to tell you, Slim started 600 pounds 5 months ago, 601 pounds. And
wow.
Where were you on your five-month weigh-in, Slimbo?
You would think I would have that handy, but I don't. I was down like 133 pounds, something somewhere around there, at the five-month mark.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, that's so cool. Congratulations, brother. That's awesome.
I appreciate it, man, but that kind of leads me, you know, a lot to this question here that, you know, clearly we have a common bond in the sense that we grew up, you know, our entire lifetimes very different from everyone else. Obviously, you're a little bit different story than myself, but, you know, when I graduated high school at over 300 pounds, my goal weight with DDP Yoga is to get down to around the 270 mark, and that's a weight I haven't been since middle school, you know. And so with that being said, I've spent my entire life facing adversity, facing being different from other people, facing not being able to do things that other people can do. So with that being said, how have you dealt with that to really take it, to take that adversity, to take that different, you know, kind of aspects about you and use that to fuel your drive and to fuel your mission and to really fuel your passion behind what you do?
You know, I mean, there have been times, I think, as I'm sure that you can relate, where part of that motivation was just to prove people wrong, you know, and then show that I can do something. But at the same time, I don't know if that's the the strongest source of motivation. I think that the thing that I try to think about a lot, there's a word that I think about just about every day, and the word is equanimity. And equanimity really means, like, it's just kind of having general acceptance to the things that which, like, fate binds to us. And, you know, and some things we can go and influence. You are living proof of that with what you've done with overcoming your weight and the journey that you're on now. I mean, it's something that inspires me. And but there are those times, too, where other people do look and stare, and it's tough. It's really hard. My family just encouraged me to try to see myself as whole first, you know, and try to see myself as good enough. And we practice sometimes, and just in meeting other people. When we'd go out in public with my mom or my dad, or especially my grandmother, she would go and take me out shopping with her. And just while she was shopping for groceries, she would go and set me in the front seat of the cart, and we'd just go up and down the aisles of the grocery store and just practice meeting people. And I'd just go and try to reach out. And she said she'd go and introduce herself first, and she'd tell someone, like, "Hi, my name's Betty." And then it was my turn to introduce myself. And she said, "Just tell them, hi, my name's Kyle." So that's what I would reach out to go and shake their hand and say, "Hi, my name's Kyle." And she told me, she said, once people can hear your voice, they can see your face, they can shake your hand, you know, the disability will fade away. It's not something that'll even matter. And, you know, to this day, that's probably the first thing I try to do when I meet someone, is just to go and reach out and shake your hand. Some people, most people respond with a normal handshake at first, but every now and then some people will freak out when I go to shake their hand, like, "Whoa, what do I do? The guy doesn't have a hand. Oh, my God." You know, but and most times it goes over really smooth. And it's, you know, just to say, you know what, it, kind of in an unspoken way, I try to communicate that, like, we all have some type of disability, every person, but I'm not going to allow my visual one to affect my relationship with you. And, you know, I hear that in your voice and your passion and just, I mean, to what you said there, like, if life gets any better, I'm going to explode. Like, I mean, you know, that energy, I think, is going to go and carry you into helping so many other people just by staying on the path that you're on. But sometimes it starts with trying to accept ourselves first.
That's awesome.
Man. So Slimbo, thanks for calling in, buddy. Appreciate it, man. And
thank you.
Great work, man. Our next person we got on, Mike Mullins. How you doing, Mikey?
What's going on, guys? How's it going?
Hey, Mike. How's it going, man?
Good, man. A lot of people here know my story. I've shared it quite a few times. I used to wrestle on the independent scene. 10 years, body broken, physically a wreck. And I love what you said. Because for a lot of people, it doesn't click. And for me, as much as Dallas and Paige has saved me physically, I love the workouts. I love the dietary aspect of his program. But the thing that really, truly changed me was getting my head straight. Because until you get your head straight, nothing is going to follow. You know, you got to get your head straight before your body and everything else follows. And what I wanted to ask you is, because when I was working in the wrestling business, my mentors, the people who taught me pretty much everything I know, not just about wrestling but about life, I see them now, and they are so crippled with injuries and broken down physically and sick, obese, and, you know, all gimmicked up on pills and to get by. And they all say to me, "Oh, I love that you're losing weight. I want to do that, or I wish I could do that, or I need to do that, or I have to do that to live." But the have to and want to and need to doesn't translate to doing. What do you suggest people do? Like, because I battle with myself every day. And I usually win, which is a good thing. But I still, as much as success I've had on this program, I still have a fight with myself every day, whether I want to get on the mat or whether I want to sit on the couch. But I usually get on the mat, so
right.
I'll do it. But a lot of people, that doesn't click. How do you translate from, because, man, let's face it, you had the ultimate excuse not to do anything. The ultimate excuse. How does that translate from not doing any to wanting to do something and wanting to do all these great things to doing it?
You know, I got to fess up, and I would say, too, that there are definitely, just like you said, I mean, there are those days where, you know, I don't feel motivated, and, you know, I mean, even as a speaker, you know, it's like, and there's those times where I'm not, like, super excited myself, and I, you know, kind of struggle with stuff, and, I mean, frankly, it is the people that are positive 365 days a year are the ones that kind of freak me out. I mean, it's no one, it's not sustainable, you know, you just can't do it, and, but that being said, I try to think about not stacking too many of those days together in a row is one of the things that I try to think about is, because I think that things kind of tip towards the extreme in one direction or the other. If you think about just think about maybe your language, your words, your thoughts that then turn into words. I mean, we all complain. We all have those days where we're just, you know, venting, whining, whatever, and just, excuses. And if 51% of our thoughts and our words are negative, my belief is it will gravitate towards 60%, 70%, 80% of those thoughts, those words, those beliefs being negative. And if we, though, can turn it around and the other percentage and just go and say, I'm going to go and push for 51% to focus on the good, or maybe 51% of the days I'm going to focus on just getting up and getting on that mat, you know, I mean, and that's going to go and gravitate to, in my opinion, 60%, 70%, 80% of the time, and that's where we want to go, just like Dallas talks about living 90%, I mean, it's, you know, the same thing, where we just want to go towards, it's never going to be perfect, there's always going to be things that we want to go and change, but just to not stack too many of those bad days or bad choices, bad decisions, habits, addictions. I mean, these things, like, to not allow that just to go and consume us. Because what happens is, I think our brain, we go on autopilot. And when we go on autopilot, bad stuff happens because our brain's going to go and use the decisions that are going to be the easiest in the short term. And it's a lot easier in the short term to sit down on the couch. But you can break that pattern. You know, and you're doing it, man. So, and you'll be able to help other people, too.
A lot of people would wonder, too. I know a lot of people here face the same issue, but how do you recover from those couple stacks of days that you have that negative attitude? Do you have any mindset that you get yourself into?
You know, I think part of it is just starting with, for me at least, starting with just being, like, you know, thankful for something. And even sometimes when I don't want to do something, maybe it's still working out, for instance. Maybe I'm tired. Maybe today, actually, for high schools, here in Ohio, I'm up in Ohio giving this talk, and I gave four speeches today, 4-hour-long speeches. So, like, emotionally, I was just, like, drained. And came back to the hotel room, and I was like, you know, there's no gym. It's Holiday Inn Express. I'm like, all right, what am I going to go and, you know, am I going to go and work out, or am I going to go and turn on the TV? And I was like, I'm just going to go and start, and I'm going to bust out, you know, 20 push-ups and 20 squats. Then I'll see how I feel after that, right? Get the blood flowing a little bit and kind of, you know, start it there. And it was like, all right, I can go and do a 15, 20-minute workout. And, you know, that's kind of at least the thought process I have. Just
awesome.
Start, take that bold step forward.
Yeah,
thank you very much. That's great advice.
Thank you, Mike.
Later, Mike.
It's one of those things to me. I've never had anybody get off the mat and go, damn, I wish I didn't do that.
<You know>? I never regretted working out, ever.
Yeah, no,
but they do the day after that, though, when they're cursing your name trying to put their shirt on, though. That's
I had a lightning round for you, Kyle. You know, you've been talking about a lot of stuff tonight, and people have been talking about, you know, their challenges and whatnot. And I think one of the biggest things for people that they don't realize, if something's not working in their life, like, the biggest thing that they can do is change. I mean, would you have a quick hit for anybody that would they'd be able to instantly sort of recalibrate and, like, effect change?
Sure. I am a behavioral psychology geek. I love this kind of stuff. So, I mean, change psychology is kind of this, like, new field of science that's developing. And it's really fascinating to see what happens when we try to change too many things at once. because we can go and be motivated. Maybe they come in and they go to, like, Dallas's workshop, right, and they're, like, fired up, or they come to a speech and they're, like, excited and they want to go and change 90 things about their life, you know, when they go and walk out the room. And we've all done it. We've all made the New Year's resolutions, plural resolutions, that we want to go and change. You know, in a list of 20 things, we want to go and have more time to spend with our families or have the long walks on the beach, you know, or travel or lose 10 pounds, do better at work and read more books. And then, like, 3 weeks later it goes by, you can't even look at the list. So my thought process is this. We have an 80% success rate. 80%. I mean, 80% success rate for anything, I'll take it. I'll buy it. For changing one major behavior in our life at a time. That success rate plummets to 20% once we try to change two major things in our life. So 80% to 20% by trying to change two things in our life. So, I mean, there are some people that are motivated to you know, that are capable. I mean, maybe, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts is one of my all-time favorite wrestlers. So it's so cool to see him, you know, who's living in the house. I mean, he's on track and, you know, maybe changing a lot of things at once. And some people have that mindset where they're able to change multiple things at once. But many of us don't. And I'm kind of in the same boat myself where I need to focus on one thing and just to do that. So what I tell people is that are listening to this, that, like, to take away something, change one thing. Don't change two things or three things. Take one thing that you want to go and change about your life and fight and battle that one thing until you've got that under easy control and you can move on to the next thing.
Well, I want to interject here because I played your video for Jake yesterday. And I said, you got to see this kid, dude. He is, you know, and I just went off. And I said, I'm going to shut up. I just want you to watch this video. And he sat there riveted to the screen, and he said, I want to meet that kid. So,
wow.
That's pretty cool, right? So when we
Let's
get on
do
here,
it, man. Gluten-free dinner at the house.
Absolutely. I want you to come out. I want you to go. This next week is real. I don't know when you'll be in, but we'll figure it out, and we'll find a time. If it's not before the 15th where I go on the road, then we'll do it when I come back in December. But I want to get a date. I want to lock it down, and let's make that one. Love you to come over to the accountability crib, and because I know you really know what those words mean. All right, we got to go to our next call. We got three more left. I'm sorry we can't take any more. We're trying to wind this down by 10:30, so try to keep it a little bit short here. We got Mark on the air. Mark, how are you, buddy? Thanks for hanging on. I really appreciate it.
I'm good, Dallas. This is Mark from New Jersey. We met at the expo. Good to talk to you.
Mark, what's up, buddy?
We're doing well. We got 7 inches of snow right now, I think, here in New Jersey after the hurricane. So, but definitely thank you. I love the DDP community. I don't take up too much time. But I want to ask you, Kyle, you know, one of the things is, like, you know, if one man can, anyone can. And when I was hearing your story about when you were wrestling and you said 35 times in a row that you lost.
Yep, that's right, yeah.
How did you know that being able to win and compete in wrestling, which I would say, you know, that was, you know, building your belief structure and what you could do, how did you know that it wasn't wishful thinking versus, you know, determination and just keep on going out there to accomplish your goal? Because it's one thing if, you know, you could say someone with arms and legs, they're wrestling, and, you know, they lose a whole bunch, and then, you know, they're able to win, but you truly have done something that, you know, no one else has done before. So how did you know that wasn't just wishful thinking versus determination to accomplish your goal?
To be honest, I didn't. I had no idea. And then, frankly, some of it, there was a lot of doubt there. To level with you with that, like, I begged to quit. I would beg my mom and dad to quit, and they wouldn't let me do it. But my dad, so the rule was in my family, for me and my sisters, that for all of us, that if we signed up for a sport in a season, we had to do it the whole time. We couldn't quit in, like, mid-season. Mm-hmm. You know, if my parents are going to pay the money to do it, then you got to do it. So it was sixth grade season ended. I'd lost every single match. So seventh grade comes up, and, like, I didn't want to do it. And so I avoided the conversation to sign up for wrestling like the plague. I didn't want to do it. My dad sits me down, and he's telling me the story, and he says, I didn't win a single match my first year. He said, no one wins a match the first year. Nobody ever wins a match the first year. He said, I won a match my second year, though. He said, that changed me, and I went on to become a successful collegiate wrestler. And he said, this is going to be it. You're going to do the same thing. You're gonna be able to go and win this match this year, and who knows, you can go on and wrestle in college or whatever. And so I signed up for the sport, and halfway through that season, still hadn't won that first match, and kept going over, losing again. Lo and behold, I was interviewing his dad, my grandpa, for my book, and I found out that that entire story was a complete lie. So but it was a good lie, and it worked, and that led to it did lead to that first match.
A couple times those white lies really work.
Right, moral of that story.
One of the things I just want to point out, for you know, because you said something, Kyle, like how do you pull yourself up when you get down? I'm just going to give you the three things that I do. I think of the last homeless guy, and I don't mean the guy who's out there conning money. I mean the real homeless guy. And I thank God that that's not me, my family, or any of my close friends. That's number one. Number two, I think of the last little girl, and she sticks out of my mind. I can see her clear as day. Who had cancer, had to have because she had no hair, and I'm running to the ring, and she's jumping up and down. She's so excited to see me. I give her a big, that's not my daughters. That's not my nieces. That's not in. She's not. That we don't have that pain that they're going through. I'm so thankful for that. And then I think of all the things that I've had and all the things, how lucky I've been. And no matter how bad you think you got it, trust me, there's someone who's got it 10,000 times worse. A lot of someone's. And if you get to thinking of living life with an attitude of gratitude, I'm a big fan of Tony Robbins. And he was talking about this guy who was 92 years old and was still speaking. And he came. His whole theme was about living life with an attitude of gratitude. And Tony came up to him and he was like, you've been doing this for like 50 years now. how do you get the drive to keep going out there and doing it? And he said, there's still some people out there. There's still some people that need to hear the message. Living life with an attitude of gratitude. It's really powerful. Okay, we got two more on here, and then we're going to call the night, guys. Thanks for hanging in there. Really appreciate it. And I want to make sure I got this. Is it Rosalie? Is that how I say
that?
There
is. You got
awesome.
It. Awesome. Thank you. And I'm like this very fast. I'm shy anyway, so I would anyway. But Dallas, you are a beacon of hope. You're just a really wonderful human being. And I'm into prayer, and I pray for you constantly. So just know that. And Kyle, when I saw your video today, because they directed us to YouTube, I've always wanted to call into these shows, but I never could because I didn't think anybody would be able to have the depth have gone through the depth and come up on the other side like you have. And it's just quite chokes.
Thank you.
It impresses me. And anyway, so when you said you were in a bad place last November, I had just gotten diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I was in a bad place and stayed there for a long time. And I'll tell you, the DDP yoga stuff is, every day I thought I want a little shot of hope, just a little shot of hope. And that's what it was, So the power of hope. And anyway, what I like to write, and I started interviewing people with MS just to kind of learn how people cope with it. And one woman said to me, just what you said today, we all have something. She says, I've got MS, but my husband has, blah, 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 and we all have something. And I think that has helped me put it in a different perspective that I've got two questions for you, they're requests in a way. And one is, I want to jog again. And I used to jog, not great, but I did. And now, when the guy, just before we said, you don't know if it's wishful thinking or just kind of determination, and asked you about that. Well, maybe mine is a real pipe dream, but when I do DDP yoga, that's my goal.
Absolutely.
I would appreciate to write down your words of wisdom on that. I'll write down pipe dreams.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's I think having that dream and that vision, that reason to wake up for something in the morning is probably the single most important thing. And it's just, you know, it's just, to me, that's what drives me is just to, it's not about the money or stuff or whatever else, because as we know, I mean, that stuff is like fleeting anyway. I mean, it's, we fantasize about what we want or what we want to have or this or that, what we want to do. But, you know, I'd say with that, like, think about, there's a big difference between what you do and why you do something. Mm-hmm. You know, you can say what I'm going to do all the time, but just, you know, we ask each other, you know, what do you do for your career? What do you do for a living? And it's very rare do you hear someone say, why do you do it?
Mm-hmm.
But that, to me, I think is just a really important question, is just to, mm-hmm. you know, in your life, in this next journey, this next chapter, is to, mm-hmm. to find your why, you know, find a way to connect meaning and purpose to your vocation. You know, Aristotle said, where our talents and the needs of the world meet and intersect, there lies our purpose.
Okay, that's wonderful. This is set aside, but do you read Buddhism? You kind of sound like, equanimity sounds like a Buddhist word to me.
It's been discussed in Buddhism. It's actually discussed, too, in a lot of different things. Christianity, it's Stoic philosophy. So that word itself is just generally means acceptance. I do study a lot of just different philosophies and religions, but I mean, it does. It's general acceptance of things.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Leslie, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. I appreciate what you're doing, both of you. Take care.
Wait, hold a second.
Thank you.
Leslie, did you leave yet? Did she leave? All right, she left, but I'm sure she's probably still listening. Leslie, I want you to work on breathing, okay? Because Crystal Stewart, who now works with us, on DDP Yoga, came here. She contest and she won the program. And it's one of the few people who have won the program who lives the program. And she has MS and she goes through a lot of stuff. And when I talk to her, you know, or even write on emails, it's focus on your breath. You know, and so many things that Kyle said today are so, it's all the same, living life at 90% based on life's 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it and what you actually control. Focus on what you control as opposed to what you don't control. You know, and we do control the way we react, how we adapt, and how we breathe. Focus on your breath. I've really gotten there. I'm taking it to a whole different level now, and it's almost in its own way, it's a form of meditation as well, you know, breathing in for three and out for three and in for five and out for five. And the other day I got in for 71 and out for 72 before I had to take that deep breath. And you have to build that because your diaphragm's like a balloon. The more you blow it up, the more air you put in it. For some reason, I had this article from this doctor, and I can't find it, where he talked about when we cut the air supply off to our brain, we're breathing there, or just not breathing. The only difference between excitement and fear is whether you're breathing or not. But the doctor talked about right? You know, he talked about when we cut off our breath, we like shut off these certain things in our brain that we don't think as clearly. And I know for a fact, because when my daughter Brittany and her mom going through that 15, 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old mother-daughter thing, oh, my God. You know, and I was living in L.A., and, you know, Brittany would call me, oh, my God. And I was like, dude, how can I breathe with me? And I started breathing, and she tried to talk. I go, no, don't talk until you got your breath. When she got her breath, she goes, okay. Here's what happened. And then as soon as I hang up with her, her mother called, oh, my God, you're crying. So the breath, our breath, it's the most important thing in the last 15 years I've learned. Own your breath. It'll really help you out, Rosalie. And our last Catherine. Catherine, I believe. Like my buddy Marlon just called in. I was trying to click myself over to my yes, it is. Catherine, I didn't make sure.
Hello?
Hey, Catherine.
Hey, how are you?
Doing fantastic. Thank you for calling.
Oh, great. Dallas, I just want to say I am so happy to have found the program. I have cerebral palsy, and I never thought fitness was for me. I have this sort of block with it, and I'm still working on it because I just got my DVDs today. Just got my stuff today, and I think I ordered them like last week. But I wanted to say thank you for putting the stuff out there on the web that you did, because now I want to do something to help people with my condition to find you guys or to find something, because there's really not much out there. As far as Kyle, I wanted to say, what's the most difficult challenge you had with the yoga workout that you're still working on? Because mine is balance.
Mine, honestly, I'm like a borderline narcoleptic, so if I get too deep and then relax into something, I'll go out.
Okay.
You know, panic, getting kind of serious. I think for me, a lot of it is I try to just focus on, and frankly, finding that zone that's like a good spot for me to be in when I go and train and work out is like, to be able to, sometimes we can like push way too hard and like overdo something and end up hurt. Sometimes we don't push hard enough. And I think there is that zone, that intensity there in between that is, I tell people kind of just go to that, 85-90%, sort of on the RPM scale when we're training and working out, and you're right, when you have a disability, physical disability, then there aren't that many resources to go and figure out how am I going to go and get there to do that. But that is, that intensity is really, I think, in any type of training, and it doesn't have to be fast, but it's in intensity, meaning like just the veracity that we approach something with is really important to the success of the program. And I kind of liken it to, like I was at the Grand Canyon in Arizona 2 weeks ago, saw it for the first time. It was beautiful. And, some people at the Grand Canyon, they want to see the Grand Canyon, but they want to see it maybe by the section that's like fenced in. They don't necessarily want to go over to the spot that's like wide open in the canyon. Then some people do. They want to get to the edge of the canyon. You have some people that really like kind of lean over the edge. And you kind of got to, if that edge is, going too far, so to speak, you kind of got to find that zone for you. Like where is it going to go and work to make it sustainable for your body? Because when you go just a little bit outside of that comfort zone, with this program, like you're going to go and push yourself to grow. And, if you push too much too soon, it's going to set you up for failure. If you don't push hard enough, it's going to set you up for failure. So I'd say just find that spot that's that good intensity for you where you are going to grow without like overdoing it.
Cool. How do you find that? Is there is there something that when you're in that spot? How do you know? Because some people that meditate or they do different things, they know when they hit their zone. This is new to me, so I'm trying to figure out, A, what I can do, B, how to sustain it, and a whole bunch of other things. So I'm sort of in a bit of a shock, but I'm loving it. It's just a shock.
Oh, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. So you don't have to figure it out right away. And the cool thing is about a program like this is that you're going to go and learn more about your body. You're just going to become a lot more attuned to, like, what's right, what's wrong, where the imbalances are, different things like that. And then you can kind of tweak it and fix it from there. So I'd say just, I almost kind of visualize that, with, like, the RPMs in a car where it kind of goes into that, like, red line area. Like if you go and you like redline it out, bring it back. If I'm not pushing it though anywhere near that red line, then I know that I'm not going hard enough. So
Fair enough.
Just kind of visualize that. It might help out.
Oh, thank you very much. Very helpful. And thanks again, DDP.
Absolutely.
Wonderful stuff.
Yeah, one of the things I want to say before you go, Catherine, just what you said right there is listen to your body. Don't, check all egos before you step into it. Just take your time. There's always someone modifying something so you can show the easiest way to do it. And I want to leave you. Robert just texted me over this. Thank you, Robert, for this. What Arthur tells his kids, he says, you are not your disability.
True. True, that makes sense. I connected because of Arthur's video, and I've connected to him and had the privilege of speaking to him or communicating through Facebook and through the Team BDP, and I get it. I'm just, I guess I'm sort of working through the modifications, and so I guess what I want to do is post stuff that will help people as I go along. I hope it's helpful to others.
But if you write stuff or video stuff, that's what Arthur did. Before there was a YouTube, I mean, we were on YouTube, but YouTube was not even a year old.
I remember those days.
And he started posting. I didn't know what he was doing. I was like, oh, my God, you're actually talking on this thing. Wow, that's interesting. I go, get a better camera.
Cool.
Well, thank you for calling in, darling. And listen, thank you, everybody, for calling in today. And Kyle, you know, you're incredible you would be. I can't wait to meet you. So stay. Kyle, I'm going to get your number from Robert. You have his number.
Yes. Absolutely. I will I will make sure that we are connected. There's too much fun to be had now that you're hanging out in Hotlanta. So I'm definitely down for that.
Robert, oh my God, on there, been an incredible. Hey, son.
Yeah, you're starting to break up on his hardcore.
Yeah,
that's the end. All right, there, guys. Thank you, everybody. Kyle, I'll talk to you later as soon as I get off the air with this. Everybody else, thank you. Been
absolutely
wonderful. Even
thanks, Tom.
Checked it today, man. That was a great workout, man.
The powerbomb set up by Paige. Into the diamond cutter.
I don't believe it. Diamond cutter out of the powerbomb.
We're going home.
You've been listening to DDP Radio. Tune in again next week for another edition of DDP Radio with more great guests, inspiration, and news from Diamond Dallas Page and Team DDP Yoga. Keep up all the great work and, most importantly,
own your life.
Talk Radio.